This is a man that needs no introduction.
Who is this guy?
The most knowledgeable columnist in the city of Pittsburgh.
Some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey.
He goes by only one name.
Hotter than Bond, cooler than Bullet. Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. It's Rossi. And he's here right now on Trip Live Radio.
Trip columnist Rob Rossi joins us Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays here on Trib Live Radio at 11 a.m. right about this time. Rossi, Tim Benz had a Penguins trade rumor that piqued my interest here just a few moments ago from Inside Pittsburgh Sports regarding Patrick Hornquist. Do you think or have you heard anything in regards to Hornquist being on the trade
block? I have not. I think Hornquist can generously be described as a disappointment in Pittsburgh for anybody that's looking at it accurately. Hasn't been healthy enough to really make a contribution the way they expected him to last year, and hasn't really been a good fit for either center. So if they're looking to move him, I don't think it would be a bad idea, although they're weakest right now at the top six. So if you're going to move him, you better be getting the top six back. What was the rumored return?
I'll give it to you here. The rumored return was having him go out to Calgary. I'm not sure if there'd be other things involved here, money swapping, draft picks, whatever. Rob, but the suggestion from Inside Pittsburgh Sports was that Chris Russell would be the guy in return.
Chris Russell. Well, I suppose anything's worth a shot. I mean, to me, one of the things that isn't being discussed enough about being discussed right now and is going to be a factor is the Penguins have zero room against the salary cap. They have about $300,000. That can't even get you an NHL player. And they have this situation with Pascal Dupuis where, I mean, they don't know what's going to be available to them with him because he's 3.7 on a cap hit, and you know it could be a situation where every time he has a scare, he's missing a couple of games, and you guys know how that works. That puts them in a precarious position. So I don't think it would be the worst move if they moved somebody to get somebody back in return, but part of that return included freeing up cap space because they are going to have to have some upgrades at a couple of spots. If they really want to be a true Stanley Cup contender, in addition to other things. And I don't know how they do that right now with the roster the way it is because they just don't have the cap space.
Well, do you think it ever gets to the point where, and we always talk about, I asked you the other day about Pascal's wife. I mean, does it get to the point where it's not his decision and Penguins got to tell him, look, we can't do this?
No, if he's healthy, there's nothing they can do. I mean, and that's the problem. I mean, it's... you know, the NHLPA could file a grievance, and a very convincing one, if they thought the Penguins were doing something with Pascal Dupuis because he wasn't a certainty for them, but he was healthy. And by that, I mean, if he can play, but he can't play consistently like this, and then they're telling him not to play, or he has clearance to play, and they don't want him to play and all that, that would be a grievance-type territory, and... I don't think they want to get into that situation.
We're joined by Rob Rossi here on Trib Live Radio. I'm looking at the standings, Rossi, as we were speaking here. I mean, the rest of the Met, like, other teams have been disappointments too. Definitely Columbus. The Islanders haven't been as impressive as I thought they would be, but the Rangers, God, they look like they look solid again. Another shutout last night.
Well, the Rangers and the Capitals are great hockey teams and terrible matchups for the Penguins. You saw how tough it was for the Penguins to not only beat the Capitals, but be competitive during long stretches of that game. I mean, they needed Marc-Andre Fleury to be brilliant. The Islanders, flat out, top to bottom, have more talent than the Penguins. I guess it comes down to whether you believe the Penguins' style of play is sustainable for winning not only throughout the rest of the regular season, but also, can they win in the playoffs like that? And remember, to get out of the Metropolitan Division, you're most likely going to have to beat the Capitals and the Rangers. So if the idea is to win the Stanley Cup, they need to go make some moves because they are not built to win a Stanley Cup right now unless their four best players who aren't Marc-Andre Fleury suddenly become impact players. And there's not a lot of evidence under Mike Johnston, whether you like this or not, it's a fact. There's not a lot of evidence under Mike Johnston that Crosby, Malkin, and Letang have done anything but taken a step back. in terms of their productivity.
Rob, let's switch it up and talk Steelers here on Jagoff of the
Thank
Week.
You.
Day, I was advancing many of our colleagues in the Pittsburgh media for defending Mike Mitchell in his post-whistle, post-play antics. You know, forgetting the ball was live, barking to the crowd, going after A.J. Green and getting a penalty. These sort of things from Mike Mitchell that are part of his M.O., I think are completely separate from a conversation about his play. I think the guy has had the best season so far for a Pittsburgh Steelers safety since Troy Polamalu in 2010. I think his play has been way above the line, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. So I feel like I can praise him, but still be critical of all the other ancillary crap that goes on and goes along with Mike Mitchell. But there have been numerous columns and people on the radio rushing to Mitchell's defense for fan criticism of him. I think the fans are right in this regard. Where do you fall on it?
I think that the only thing to criticize about Mike Mitchell the other day was after he delivered a crushing hit, he was selfishly posing instead of looking for where the ball was.
Right. And isn't that all right to criticize?
Otherwise, I thought he had a tremendous impact on the game. I thought he has, at times this year, played exactly like the player that people thought they were getting when they paid him the money as a free agent. I think he has been arguably their second-best defensive player, other than Cam Hayward. And I think he has brought a physicality back to Pittsburgh Steelers defensive football that they have lacked. He has brought a thrashness that they've lacked, and that's important. The Steelers' identity has been defense for 40-some years. It's also been, we are not afraid to be the bad guys and punch you in the mouth. And they have lost that in recent years, and Mitchell has brought that back. Now, would I think Mike Mitchell be better off playing to the whistle and, you know, not with the theatrical stuff, at least in terms of fumbles and that? Yes, but that's one incident the other day. I'm not going to damn him for that. Absolutely not.
No, but it's not one incident. No, Rob, it's not one incident. I just gave you three. He did crap last year, too, and he's gotten...
No, I'm just talking about last Sunday. Like, the idea last Sunday that people were mad at him because he didn't know where he was with a fumble recovery and that on the sideline,
that was ridiculous. That part was ridiculous.
It was one of the most asinine things I've ever heard from the social media era.
Yeah, that was dumb.
He was great in that game.
But the point is, I feel like a lot of people, and I outlined a couple columns and put a couple quotes up there, people were defending him on the radio recently, are doing so because there's a sense of guilt out there that they were too hard on him last year for his play, and we didn't know that he was injured at the time. That, to me, is irrelevant to the argument. And quite frankly, so is his level of play this season.
Well, I also think taking it easy on guys because they're cooperative with the media is irrelevant to the argument. That's why I never say a guy's a good guy because he talks to the media. That's part of his job.
Were you saying that people are doing that with Mitchell?
Not with any athlete. I mean, I hear it all the time in the media. You know, he's a good guy. Or I think there's a lot of times where guys get not a free pass, but an easier pass because they're cooperative with the media. I mean, Ben Lovejoy was terrible last year at the end of the season. But he's good in the media. He's good with the media, so I think we overlooked a lot of the fact that his defense was laugh-out-loud awful at the end of the last year. Now, there were other factors in that, but I think that goes into it. I think that...
I'll give you the all-time argument there, Rob. Tom Barrasso gets in the altercation at Froggy's with a bunch of other Penguins. It's front-page news.
Absolutely.
And then when he gets exonerated or the charges are dropped, it's a little blob on the seventh page because he was a Jag. Martin has two wives at the same time, and it barely got in. Once the initial report of it was over, everybody treated him the way they always did because he was a nice guy.
The reality of the situation is the knives came out for Ben Roethlisberger, and I'm not talking about the alleged incidents. I'm talking about the coverage of it. The knives came out because people weren't happy that they didn't view him as being as cooperative as he could be.
Let's parse that for a second, Rob, because the knives came out after the second incident when he continued to be a dink like he was his entire career after the first one. When the media worked together practically to get him exonerated from what happened in Reno.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the second time. Bring it back to the Sidney Crosby discussion. Don't you think that because he has spoken every day, he got a much freer pass 2 years ago in the postseason when he wasn't producing.
Oh, sure he did. Absolutely, yes.
I mean, I'm not saying I understand it. It's human nature. I'm just saying I think how guys are perceived to be with the media always shapes the way the media covers them.
That's plenty fair, and yes, that's part of the reason why Malkin gets way more criticism when things start to go bad quickly than Sid does, because he doesn't talk and, you know, tries to avoid the media as opposed to Sidney taking all the questions. I just don't think that's applicable to Mitchell, because although Mitchell does a lot of interviews, he's oftentimes caustic with the media and, you know, will criticize the media for how they're presenting a story and, you know, listens to a lot of things, reads a lot of things, and tries to correct some media members in his opinion on opinions they've advanced. So Ryan Clark was very similar. It's not just they both play safety, but Ryan Clark was the same way. He'd never say no to an interview, but I hardly would have called Ryan Clark cooperative with the media.
But don't you think that the fans' perception of players is somewhat shaped by the way we cover them?
Absolutely.
And don't you think that
maybe
sometimes the play of Clark and the play of Mitchell is viewed more harshly by the fan base because sometimes we in the media, and I'm guilty of this too, make things personal when it's just dealing with our jobs?
Sure. Rob, I'm not debating that part, but what I'm saying is just because media members were hard on Mitchell last year, that doesn't mean they have to overcorrect this season and defend the guy for things that I don't think are defendable because they feel bad because they were too hard on him because no one knew his groins were detached. You know, it's just
I'm not disagreeing with you, Tim. I think that is happening. And I've judged Mike Mitchell based off what he does on the football field, and the criticism I have him of Sunday was that after he made the big play, he did not finish it, or he did not look to finish it. He was selfishly celebrating. But I'm not going to criticize his play because I think his play has been outstanding this year. I think he's the biggest reason that secondary hasn't been the tire fire we expected.
Oh, yeah, and I would not criticize Mitchell's play at all either. I agree with you. I don't know if you heard what we said earlier, but we said exactly the same thing that you did. He's been the second-best player on the defense this year.
So, yeah, I mean, So I think we're agreeing. I'm not sure where it got off track there.
Final thing, Rossi. We were trying to get Tim Benz some votes for criticizing Narduzzi for his post-pit game antics, but he's actually gotten a lot of support. What do you come down with? Do you think Pat Narduzzi's been too thin-skinned, a little too snippy in some of his dealings with the press this year?
Well, this is where Rob's going to get mad at me because Rob got dragged into this.
Rob what?
You got dragged into this by bloggers and fans who are lumping us together as people taking shots at Pitt.
I made a decision a couple years ago to stop taking things personally when coaches or players get snippy after games because, to me, it's a very emotional situation and I don't always handle myself in the emotional situations the way I'd like to a couple days later. I'll tell you this. I went and asked Pat Narduzzi a question the other day at his Monday availability, and I said flat out, you know, for those of us who wouldn't understand some of these things or wouldn't see these things, what did you see on film? And he gave a pretty insightful answer about the defensive line specifically. I think Pat Narduzzi is learning how to go from being a fairly affable, cooperative, and at sometimes, you know, deprecating type of defensive coordinator to being a head coach. And there is a transition, and there is a different relationship you're going to have with the media. And I think there are things he will do differently than he has done this year as he becomes more and more comfortable as a head coach. But I also think you have to acknowledge with this discussion, he's a first-time head coach. And I think if you go back and look at Mike Tomlin's first season compared to the way he's dealt with the media from that point on, there was a difference. So I think all of these guys learn how to handle themselves a lot better.
Actually,
even if they're not.
The comparison I made was to Cowher. I think there's a lot of early Cowher there, grinding on his assistants, getting snippy with reporters, losing his cool on the sidelines. I think there's a lot of apt comparison to an early Cowher there, which could be a very good thing because Cowher ended up working out really well for the Steelers, obviously. Now, is he going to get 13 years like Cowher did with the Steelers? Hell no. This is Pitt we're talking about. But, you know, I echo your sentiments. He's learning, but let's point out that he's learning, and there's been some stumbles along the way.
No, I do. I think also, to me, the most interesting thing about Saturday was I think that was the first time that Pat Narduzzi came into a post-game press conference realizing how much Pitt is behind the eight ball in terms of the talent discrepancy with the real top teams. He had great players at Michigan State that he could coach the way he wanted to coach, sort of the man coverage and things like that. He doesn't have that here. And when he talked about something like needing to get address things in recruiting or you guys wouldn't understand, to me, that was the first time I saw Pat Narduzzi come after a game and realize it doesn't matter how hard we would have worked, how much we tried, we were never going to be competitive in that game. And I think that was a moment that he will learn from, but I don't think it was a great moment for him after the game.
Well, it's funny you say that, Rob, because I was thinking the same lines, the same thing about the talent pool there, looking kind of quietly. We haven't talked about it much. Paul Chryst is 8-2 at Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean they have more talent.
That's what I mean.
I mean, it's, you know, I don't think anybody thought Paul Chryst was a bad coach. You know, Pitt has a ways to go to get better in a lot of areas. I mean, just because they can get a Tyler Boyd doesn't mean they have, or a Whitehead, doesn't mean they have those players across the board. They have to get better in some places. And, you know, the only way they're going to do that is to recruit. And I thought he answered that question pretty honestly on Monday about the recruiting. And I'm happy he did, because to me, we should never kill a guy for speaking honestly. And he basically came out Monday to a couple of questions and said, yeah, we need to get better players. Now, you can say, well, why would a coach say that about the players he has now? Well, I never kill a guy for answering the question honestly, because whether we like the answer honestly or not, I'd rather get an honest answer than most of the, you know, bull dung that we get from every other person that speaks in town.
Well, let me ask all you guys this. Do you think that was a positive? They had a lot of recruits at that game. Was that entire performance, I'm talking about them losing the game, but the atmosphere at the stadium and bringing back people like Ditkin, Marino, and retiring Jimbo Cover, was the entire day a positive or negative impression for a recruit, do you think?
Hard to say.
I'd say positive.
Better that game than Carolina when it was half full or three-quarters full.
Am I a defensive back? Because I think I can play quickly if I'm getting recruited by Pitt.
I agree with Tim. I think if you're a defensive player right now, you look at that and say, there's a potential to come in here and play right away, and you get to play some pretty good talent. You get to play some pretty good competition. And if they play those type of teams, it's going to be a packed stadium. So compared to some of these earlier games where there's no atmosphere at all, I think if I was a recruit, I'd be encouraged. Because let's face it, guys, the better players in that sport, they want to play early.
Yeah.
And that's something Pitt can and should sell.
It's a mixed bag, though, because half the stadium is rooting for the other team.
Well, and that's going to be the case where Notre Dame goes almost anywhere.
Yeah. And then you also got shellacked. So, I mean, are you looking at it as, can I win with this team? Are you looking at it more from, is this a good place to play? Will I win with this team? Or is this a good opportunity for me? And every kid thinks differently.
Interesting question. All right, Rossi, good stuff, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Take care,
always.
Guys. All right.
Rob Rossi, Trib columnist. One thing about the talent discrepancy, I don't disagree with you guys in Pitt Notre Dame, but does it tell you more about Iowa that Pitt hung in there with them on the road and arguably could have beat them, should have beat them, with some aggressiveness or lack thereof in that game, but had really no chance to beat Notre Dame? I mean, maybe it's a matchup thing, but Pitt
was
in there
with Iowa. Well, the Temple
team
that you said stunk all year got beaten by Notre Dame, which killed Pitt, so...
You just want to keep bringing that up.
No, I think that's a good point, Ken. But I think the jury's still out on Iowa. I think the people aren't quite sold on them yet. I think as the longer Iowa goes unbeaten, and basically I agree there are no moral victories. But if you're using games as measuring sticks, that's one. I think it's worth noting that Notre Dame has beaten 2 1-loss teams. Navy's only loss was Notre Dame, and Temple's only loss was Notre Dame.
I think Iowa's problem is they're not flashy. They're a good, solid team. They're not going to blow teams out. Like, they beat Wisconsin 16-6 or something. I don't know if that's going to play with the committee long-term, but I guess it did this week because they're ranked fifth.
Well, like I read, the committee made a comment about Iowa not being in the top four, saying that they don't think their offense is good enough to put them in there at this point.
They had them ahead of Oklahoma State, which is surprising.
Oklahoma State's defense isn't good enough, I guess, then.
Yeah, maybe.
Condoleezza Rice didn't have an Oklahoma State t-shirt.
It's almost like Oklahoma State was just thought of so poorly, and because they were ranked 14th, they didn't want to jump them all the way up into the top four or five.
I'd be pissed if I was Jacksonville State. They're 8-1, and their only loss was to Auburn. at Auburn.
Somehow
by
Duquesne
a touchdown.
Somehow Duquesne's going to get drugged into this.
No, I'm not being serious. They're 8-1. Their only loss was by a touchdown at Auburn.
Granted, Auburn's terrible. Don't make me pull up that flow chart as to why Duquesne can beat Alabama.
Before.
I'll find it.
Josh, you know Jacksonville State's nickname? You probably do.
I should know this. I saw it.
They're like the Bengals, the Tigers, or something like that.
They're fighting Gamecocks.
Oh. Just,
right. Harvard's 8-0, too.
Oh, Ivy League bias.
They've got the longest winning streak in football, don't they?
Harvard's 8-0. You know what their schedule ranks? 228th.
No scholarships either, right? How many, do they give scholarships out at Harvard? I don't think they do.
Where did Condi go? She went to Duke, right? Or Stanford?
I think she went to... I'll look that up.
Does Ivy League give scholarships? Because that's one double. That's
FCS. Yeah. The Ivy technically doesn't give away athletic scholarships, yeah. But you can... What do you get? It's differently phrased. It's basically a scholarship.
You get Facebook shares.
Yeah. What?
I don't know.
Actually, you'll love this. She went to the University of Denver.
Went to Denver?
She went to the University of Denver. Condoleezza Rice. Graduated in 1981.
She was high when she filled
these
up.
But she was a faculty member at Stanford.
That's what it was. That's okay. Because she had to recuse herself when Stanford came into the conversation, right?
As every member that's attached to a school has to do when their school's being discussed.
Unless we're talking about the hockey tournament, we have no worries about the University of Denver. No offense to Bill Bennett.
Unless you're Beano Cook voting in the AP poll, and when Penn State gives up two late touchdowns in an undefeated season to an Indiana team with the third string in, you vote them out of first place.
Oh, wait a minute. She has a... Am I reading this right? She has a grad degree from Notre Dame?
Just recuse herself.
She has so many degrees, she can't vote.
Yeah. She's so politically tied, she's got no political influence.
Who would she vote for in Jagoff of the Week this week? Right now, Ray Armstrong is in the lead.
Well, that sounds like a politically pandering move that she would embrace. So,
second place right now is pretty split here between Pitt fans, people defending Mike Mitchell, Mike Tomlin, and Jerry Jones, who's crept into a little bit of a role here, but it's a little bit behind the pace. You can make a difference today. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com to cast your vote. David says, shouldn't Jerry Jones be left off for leaving room for others to win? He's a chartered member that could be voted for every week. We get a lot of those.
Kind of a Tortorella factor or a flyer factor. Do we have any votes for the Flyers for hurting Connor McDavid?
I saw a neat...
No.
USA Hockey had an article about Tortorella. I wanted to share the headline with you because it was funny. The new one just came yesterday. I was paging through it. Where is that? U.S. looks to tap into Tortorella's fiery nature at World Cup.
God.
Missouri football's gotten a couple votes, too. Unexplained on Twitter. I guess just what's the accusation there? That they're pandering?
Exactly. It's phony. It's insincere. It's pandering. It's thinly veiled.
They're having a lousy season anyway. It's an easy
I don't
want
to practice.
Quit.
Start things up next year. Who's Missouri got the rest of the way? What teams are going to kick the shit out of Missouri the rest of the way?
Good question.
Arkansas? Arkansas's already got that tight end trick play in the book now. They're gonna
We got a story of change for the good coming out of college football, and all the skeptics and cynics out there can't even
skeptics
allow
and
this
cynics from within their own locker room, Ken.
Yeah, one guy in
no, well, he says it's not just him. He says there are others, including some of the black players too.
Missouri has BYU at home this weekend, Tennessee
Loss.
At home next week, and at Arkansas the day before Thanksgiving. Or day after.
They gonna be favored in any of those games?
They may be favored. They might be favored in that Arkansas game. No, they won't. They're 1-5. No, never mind.
They're
probably not favored in any of them.
Pat Neltuna votes for Greg Hardy. He updated his Twitter bio a little bit ago, guys, to say he's innocent until proven guilty. This guy just doesn't know when to shut the hell up.
See, that's the difference between him and Ray Rice. This guy is such a jagoff, Greg Hardy. He's going to get Ray Rice back in the league whether Ray Rice can play or not. Because people are going
like
to look at they're going to look at Ray Rice and they're going to say, God, he's not as bad as Greg Hardy, and eventually he's going to get back in the league.
I mean, think of all the Ray Rice. He had the press conference with a wife, and, I mean, he apologized. He fell over himself to apologize. Nobody believed it or felt that was insincere or too little too late, whatever. But
there is something disturbing about all this, though, isn't there? And I made this point a number of times over when the Ray Rice story first came out when I was still back up in New England, but I got into it quite a bit with one of my co-hosts over it. The fact that the video changed everybody's mind, like the punch. Like, you had to see the punch before the firestorm was really created. We saw her being dragged out of the elevator before he got the two-game suspension. And the firestorm wasn't created until we saw the punch. And this whole Greg Hardy thing went dormant for a while and then bubbled back up again. Like, we were all just pissed off about how he acted on the sidelines. Like, that was the story about Greg Hardy for about a week, week and a half, right? How he acted on the sidelines?
Yeah.
And then the video, the photos come out, and now we're in awe again. Like, your mind can't wrap itself around creating an image of a woman being thrown on a bed full of assault weapons.
Yeah.
Like, you need to see the bruise to realize, ooh, this was bad. Like, you needed to see the girl punched in the elevator before you realized. Like, seeing her dragged out wasn't enough for you?
I mean, I think there was more outrage for Hardy than Rice, because you're right about Rice. That was very dormant. That video was a big change.
Well, I think everybody kind of, there are two sides to every story, and when it's that blatant and you see it, I think it can change your opinion. When you don't really know what happens in an argument or what was actually done, is the accuser exaggerating? I think that's a little bit understandable. Don't you always kind of view all this with take all these kind of things with a little grain of salt? I mean, anytime a celebrity, I'm talking about a rock star, a movie star, an athlete gets accused of something, I always want to know a little bit more, because I've seen a lot of these guys get accused of things.
Oh, sure. After
unfairly.
Jerome Bettis in Westmoreland County.
The Bobby Jones thing.
Yeah,
or Bobby Dales. What was the name of that place?
Right, Bobby Dales.
Yeah.
Or the Duke lacrosse case, right? I mean, there was
right.
a lot of rush
that's
to
what I mean.
There.
But then when
Ben
you see
the first
it,
time?
Then when you see it, I think there is outrage. And I don't think that's totally unfair for you to, you know, hold your judgment in abeyance till.
But Hardy was found guilty, and Jerry Jones had to have seen these photos, right? Or known the details.
Well,
like,
I don't
sure
know.
He
might have
dumb.
Had it mixed in with his stripper photos. He
well, that's what I mean. And then he comes out and says he needs us. Like, he's a leader. He needs us to, like, they're helping him out. They're helping him through his problems. Maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe they have a psychologist on staff that's working with Greg Hardy to make a difference.
Doing a great job.
Yeah, but he's showing no outward signs of being remorseful one bit.
I'll disagree with you, Ken. I don't think there was more outrage for Hardy than there was for Rice. I mean, the Rice thing, the hiding of the tape and the cover-up of the tape, that
well,
was...
Well, no, but that was after the tape, wasn't it? I mean...
Well, no, but Ray Rice was a far bigger story than Greg Hardy was. Greg Hardy was like a... As far as
it,
him...
It was, but only after the tape was released. Like, when the first news of the Ray Rice thing happened, do you think that was a bigger story, you feel like?
Yes.
Okay, I don't... I feel we like talked about it on this show, but I don't feel like it was. It exploded when the tape came out.
The tape and the handling of it brought that case to a level that still Greg Hardy has not touched yet.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Maybe Ray Rice will get back in the league based on this. You joke about that. One organization that suffered greatly is Daily Fantasy Sports. DraftKings and FanDuel are now banned in New York, which is a bit of a problem because that's their biggest state of participation, or was, and they both have offices, in some case their headquarters, in FanDuel's case, in the state of New York.
Well, that's why they got the most action there, because the guys that work there keep betting from within their office,
yeah.
As we learned a couple weeks ago.
Right. Is this the end as we know it of at least the unregulation of daily fantasy games?
No, and I'm going to tell you why when we come back.
Okay. And we'll get our hot stove segment of the day in, including Starling Marte and his gold glove, whether it was deserved. That's coming up.
And at some point, Ken, we do have the Rodney Harrison response to Jeff Fisher as well from WEEI yesterday.
Very good. That's all ahead here on the Duffy Spear Trib Live Radio Morning Show. Tim Benz, the hashtag legend, Guy Junker, in the Guy Junker Studios. And I am merely Ken Laird.
The Guy Junker. Is that what we're calling this place? The Guy Junker Studios?
Yeah, I think we should, yeah.
We could hang up a picture then.
We get
Stan.
The mirror outside. We get the,
how about
the Guy Junker mirror.
Did you see the Stan head at the Notre Dame game?
Yeah, I did.
Stocky gets on the Jumbotron and Stan's head gets on the Jumbotron.
Hey, pal. I'd rather have a head on a stick.
More to come.
When you're interviewing for a job with a criminal record, it's like having an elephant in the room. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, but it's there, and it'll be the reason you won't get the job before you face a felony. Talk to an attorney who understands the importance of a clean record.
Call attorney Frank Walker, 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805.
The Sports Grill is a relaxing, family-friendly, come-as-you-are restaurant located on Freedom Road in Cranberry Township. At the Sports Grill, the focus is certainly on local athletes, from the little stars on the rise to the Hall of Famers. The Sports Grill has become a local gathering place to showcase all the talents from local athletes. It is truly the local coaches, ADs, players, and the moms and dads who make the local athletic tradition an integral part of the Sports Grill. The Sports Grill features 40 LED screens to watch all the Steelers games, with three of them 75 inches. For more information, check us out online at thesportsgrillcranberry.com. That's thesportsgrillcranberry.com.